The downward arrow technique helps you pinpoint the self-defeating beliefs that make you vulnerable to anxiety, depression, and problems in your relationships with other people. The what-if technique helps you uncover a terrifying fantasy that triggers your anxiety. When you confront this fantasy, you can defeat your fears for good. Kristen was a divorced woman who lived in Philadelphia with her two sons, who were 9 and 11 years old. She came from a prominent family and was active in charitable activities. However, she'd suffered from agoraphobia for years and couldn't leave home unless she was with her children or a trusted friend. I asked Kristen to fill out a daily mood log so I could find out what she was so afraid of. The upsetting event on her daily mood log was simply thinking about walking to the grocery store by herself. She felt depressed, anxious, guilty, ashamed, defective, alone, embarrassed, discouraged, and frustrated. She was telling herself, "Something terrible might happen if I walk to the store alone." I decided to explore this fear using the what-if technique. It's similar to the downward arrow technique, but it's geared specifically to anxiety. You draw a downward arrow under a negative thought on your daily mood log and ask yourself questions like this. What if this were true? What's the worst thing that could happen? What am I most afraid of? A new fantasy will pop into your head. Write it down under the arrow and draw another arrow underneath it. Continue asking yourself the same types of questions. What if this happened? What am I the most afraid of? If you repeat this several times, it will lead to the core fantasy that's triggering your fears. I asked Kristen to draw a downward arrow under her negative thought and said, "Let's say you decided to walk to the grocery store on your own. What's the worst thing that could happen? What are you the most afraid of?" Kristen said, "I might drop my handkerchief on the sidewalk without noticing that I'd lost it." I asked her to record this thought directly under the arrow and put another arrow underneath it. This is how our dialogue unfolded. David, let's suppose this happened. You drop your hanky on the way to the store. What would happen then? What are you the most afraid of? Kristen, well, a terrible crime might be committed on the spot where I lost my hanky. Someone might get murdered there. David, okay, go ahead and write that down under the arrow and draw another arrow underneath it. Now, let's assume that did happen. You drop your hanky on the sidewalk and a murder is committed at that very spot. Then what? What are you the most afraid of? Kristen, the police might find my hanky at the scene of the crime and trace it back to me. They could use DNA sampling, for example. David, good. Write that down and put another arrow under it. Now, let's assume that the police did find your hanky. What then? Kristen, well, they might conclude that I was the murderer and arrest me. I have no alibi since I was alone. David, okay. Let's assume that the police arrest you and bring you in for questioning and you have no alibi. What if that happened? What are you most afraid of now? Kristen, they might put me on trial and convict me of murder. David, and then? Kristen, then they'd lock me up in prison for the rest of my life. David, clearly no one would want to spend the rest of their life behind bars, but what would this mean to you? What is it about prison that's so frightening to you? Kristen blurted out, my sons would have to grow up alone without their mother. I wouldn't be there for them. She began to cry, and it seemed like we'd struck a chord. After she had a good cry, I asked Kristen to tell me more about this fear. Kristen explained that Tom, her 11-year-old, had been causing problems at school. In addition, several neighbors had complained to the police that someone was breaking windows at night. A few days later, the police caught Tom throwing rocks at the neighbors' windows and threatened to send him to juvenile hall if he didn't straighten up. Kristen had also gotten reports from school that Tom was flunking his classes and getting into fights. She was annoyed with Tom, but reluctant to lay down the law. She'd been trying to discipline him with love and logic, but these strategies hadn't been effective. She was also frustrated because her ex-husband spoiled the boys and didn't support her efforts to discipline them. But she hadn't expressed these feelings because she was a very nice person and didn't want to make waves. There seemed to be some hidden emotions lurking behind Kristen's fears. In her fantasy, she's convicted for a crime that she didn't commit. But inside, she's really afraid that Tom is turning into a criminal. She's angry but feels guilty because she thinks it's all her fault. So in her fantasies, she's the one who ends up in prison. At the same time, she punishes Tom because he has to grow up without his mother. Psychoanalysts call this the masochistic solution. In other words, you can punish someone else as long as you punish yourself even more. When Kristen sweeps her angry feelings under the rug, they resurface, disguised as frightening fantasies. You can try to ignore your anger, but it will always come out indirectly. Anxiety is nearly always the symbolic expression of how you really feel inside. Kristen and I talked about how she could discipline Tom in a firm but loving way. She was eager to learn this skill because she was aware that her niceness wasn't getting the job done. I also taught her how to communicate more skillfully with her ex-husband so they could stop fighting and start working together as a team. Kristen's interpersonal skills and self-confidence increased considerably. Tom's teacher wrote a note to Kristen saying that there had been a marked improvement in his grades and behavior, and several months later, he was elected class president. Although we'd resolved some of the problems that had been brewing under the surface, Kristen was still afraid to leave home alone. I encouraged her to leave her house alone on a Saturday morning and sit on a bench in a park several blocks from her home. I told her to sit on the bench until her anxiety went away or improved considerably, even if it took an hour or more. I said she could bring a notebook with her and record the intensity of her anxiety every few minutes on a scale of 0%, no anxiety, to 100%, sheer panic. She could also record any frightening thoughts or fantasies she was having. This technique is called self-monitoring. Kristen said the assignment sounded terrifying, but agreed to give it a try because she was determined to overcome her agoraphobia. I said that if her anxiety started to overwhelm her, she could distract herself by concentrating intensely on something that would require all of her attention. Kristen said she'd bring her Rubik's Cube along in case she needed it. The big day finally came. Kristen forced herself to walk to the park and sit down on a bench. Her anxiety rose to 90%. And she was flooded with fantasies of being arrested and sent to prison. But she sat there and forced herself to endure the anxiety for nearly 20 minutes. Suddenly, she spotted a policeman about 50 feet away. Her anxiety shot up to 100%, and she had an almost irresistible urge to run home. But she remembered her promise not to leave, no matter how anxious she felt. So she stared at her feet and tried to make herself invisible. She could see the officer out of the corner of her eye and desperately hoped he'd leave. Instead, he turned and began walking slowly toward her. Sheer terror. She pulled out her Rubik's Cube and started fidgeting with it, but he got closer and closer. Suddenly, she saw two black shoes on the sidewalk in front of her and realized that the police officer was staring down at her, waiting. She realized that the jig was up. She set her Rubik's Cube on her lap, looked up, and held her arms out in front of her so he could put the cuffs on. But when she looked up, she saw that it was Officer O'Reilly, an old Irish policeman she'd known ever since she was a little girl. He smiled sweetly and said, "Top of the morning to you, Kristen. It's such a beautiful day. Great to see you out and about." In a flash, Kristen's fears vanished. She chatted enthusiastically with Officer O'Reilly for a few minutes and then spent the next several hours walking around downtown Philadelphia, shopping and doing all the things that she hadn't been able to do for years. Her agoraphobia never returned. 5 techniques contributed to Kristen's recovery. First, we uncovered the fantasy at the root of her fears using the what-if technique. At the same time, we exposed the frustration and anger that had been fueling her fears. This was the hidden emotion technique. Finally, we combined flooding, a form of intense exposure, with self-monitoring and distraction so she could confront the monster she feared the most. The what-if technique will help you uncover the fantasy that's been triggering your fears, but insight alone will not be enough. Ultimately, you'll have to face your fear, just as Kristen did. The form of exposure you use will depend on the nature of your fears.